Welcome to the Big Ticket Life Show, where leaders share amazing stories of healing, impact, and their own courageous leadership in their lives and businesses. Our guest this week is fantastic, but I want you to know where you can watch, listen, and take in all the goodness of the Big Ticket Life. It's right here on social media channels, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn. We put it out on all the podcast players. And I'm just still so excited about this. On DBTV, broadcast out worldwide. It's a great app. You can find it on Roku sticks, Fire sticks, smart TVs. DBTV's got something for everyone. Cooking shows, exercise shows, business shows like this one, children's shows. I know DB of DBTV, and he's building an amazing app, and I'd love for you to subscribe and get that on your own TV. Sharon McCrill, founder, chief amazing officer of everything at the Betty Brigade. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. I am, happy to have this conversation with you. It's funny, our amazing producer, Chris from Cast Ahead, who produces this amazing show for you to watch and listen and hear. You know, he's like, hey, Jeff, meet Sharon. And we kind of had a chuckle because we've been meeting each other for quite some time. We are, I guess we could say, longtime friends at this point. In a social media world, knowing each other for about two and a half years is a long time, I would say.
Yeah, so, and we hold each other accountable every week.
That's right, we do. Every Friday morning at 8 o'clock. Love it. We do that. So you have this very interesting business called the Betty Brigade. Why don't you just kind of unpack, let's see what I did there. What you do for people and how you help. And I want to get right into your view on letting things go that you accumulate in your home.
Absolutely. So Betty Brigade has been around for 21 years as of March 2023. And we're just so excited. I've been doing this a really, really long time. Helping people with their stuff is the simple way to say what we do. But we do a lot more. We help people figure out where does the stuff go. And sometimes it, you know, I've been in my house and I have to move for relocation. Sometimes it's I've been in my house for 50 years and I have no idea what it means to move anymore because I'm so attached to my things. And sometimes it's my part of my family has died and it's time to let go of the stuff. And sometimes it's also a hoarding situation and we do work with hoarders.
Yeah, we'll dig into that because I'm sure there's a lot to discuss there and how you've helped people. And I know we'll tease it now. We'll probably have that clip when you were on the Dr. Phil show. I think that was related to helping folks with hoarders and family members who are hoarders. But, letting things go, I said in the pre-show and, you know, the types of people you help, I kind of checked two out of three of those boxes, although not quite in the longevity thing, but we've lived here in our home for 16 years now. And, when you've gone from little babies to now grown young adults and young men, young teenagers, you've transcended the toys and all the iterations of things you've had and the clothes and the various stages. And so we have that box checked and sadly we're facing, the passing of a family member in our family. And so we'll soon be dealing with that. And you said in the pre-show that there is this grief that comes with letting things go.
Yeah.
Physical stuff. Tell us about that.
So people don't think about grief and stuff. They think about grief and letting go of a person, but right. Think about grief and letting go of the things that you grew up with or the things that maybe your family has passed down and they don't mean anything to you. But there is still an attachment there. And so we really talk to people as we're clearing out their homes about grief and taking a moment and appreciating the things that are being let go of and how those things may be making another family more whole. And that's really a big part of that. We believe in really, really not putting things in the trash, in recycling, in donating, in helping people sell their stuff. And that is not the norm in the world of downsizing. The world of downsizing typically means put it in a big metal can.
Yeah. Yeah. Order the dumpster and it sits in the driveway and you just progressively fill it up and empty it, fill it up and empty it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting about the stuff and making families whole and the things that maybe you might view your parents or grandparents as wanting you to have. I actually came across a thread on Reddit about China and how younger generations, I think you know where I'm going. You know, younger generations don't necessarily, I put the same sentiment on China and dishes as maybe their parents and grandparents did. You run into this where China is so valued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's been a culture shift. And so one of the things that has really changed, and I talk about this a lot, with both, my older clients and their young grandchildren, like children, you know, grandchildren that are in their 20s and lower,
right,
is that people that are growing up now value technology, they value mobility, and they value experiences. So
right,
technology, mobility, experiences. That does not include big brown furniture. It does not include China. It
yeah,
does not include linen. But the folks where they, you know, the folks that grew up in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, they would register for, you know, the fine china. They would register for the good silver. They would register for the linens. And there would be big gatherings of families. And it's not that families don't still gather, but it's usually not so formal. It's usually not quite so set up. And so that formalization of family gathering has significantly changed. And as we're talking to older people, we're just saying, hey, it's not that your stuff isn't valuable. It's just not valuable to younger people. And there are people out there that are still collecting. They're harder to find, but it's still possible. And so it's about figuring out the pathway to get that to happen. And so we have to also say to the older folks, hey, so your grandchildren don't want your china. They don't want the big pieces of brown furniture, because they're super freaking heavy to move. Like, mm-hmm, nobody wants that stuff.
And
they're really okay with the IKEA furniture because it's much more disposable. And so that's where the culture shift has happened.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my grandparents, I lost both my grandparents. It was my grandmother's 1 year anniversary of her passing. I think it was on Saturday or Friday.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
And I mean, you know, they lived a great life. They impacted a great many people. And so that was good, right? There was a lot of goodness in their life. And I think what I took from their passing, the tangible stuff, my grandmother had this set of pots and pans that she got when she got engaged. She registered for it. It had this little bobber thing in the lid that would rattle, ting, 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 when, you know, the food became to a boil. And as a kid, it was that memory. Such a great memory of walking into grandma and grandpa's house, Thanksgiving dinners, Christmas dinners, birthday dinners, and you would hear that noise is synonymous with my grandmother.
Hmm.
Well, I didn't necessarily need the whole set, and I didn't want the whole set because I know my other cousins felt similar ways. So I just said, give me a pot and a pan. Just give me one. And I'll take that as that memory thing. And I wonder if others can't do that too with like a piece of chinaware, like a serving plate. Obviously, if you have a nice set and a collector wants it, you don't want to break it up. But if it's not going anywhere, maybe you can shave off some of those parts and pieces and keep those memories alive.
Well, I can tell you that for the most part, china is not valuable. Even the really good stuff is not super valuable. It's just not. Because most people don't want it. And here's the reason. It almost always has silver or gold around the rim. So you can't put it in the microwave. And people say, oh, and you have to hand wash it. No, you don't. You can put it in your dishwasher. Will the gold or silver come off? Sure, eventually, but at least you're using it. And so that's what we really encourage people to do, especially older people. We say, okay, yeah, have your everyday, but also have use your good set of china. Like, there's no reason. What are you saving it for? Especially, like, you know, we come across people who are like 75 years old and we're like, and they're like, oh, I only use it on the good. And I'm like, for what? Like, use it. You love it. You picked it. Use it.
Yeah.
And who cares if you chip one? Who cares if you break one? No one cares. And there's, you know, there's a website out there called replacements.com. So if you need to replace the piece, you can. It's super easy. It's about making things are not precious. People are precious.
Yeah.
Memories are precious. And in my line of work, what I see so often is that people are putting stuff above relationships. And that's just not a good way to be. You know, it's devaluing the humans in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. On that note, you know, I said I check a couple of those boxes of types of people you help. And, you know, we have my father-in-law with his health. He has about 6 months left and with us. And, you know, everybody's upset naturally, as most people, as all people would. And, you know, we don't have this dynamic, but I know it happens. You said people put value on stuff over people. Your experience, 20 plus years doing this, you've no doubt come across loved family member who passes away. People come in and they want to honor that person by protecting their memories, getting those things that are important to them. How do you help a family navigate those clashes that happen? So this way, the stuff doesn't become more important than the person and the memory.
Right. So that's a great question. How do you navigate making the stuff more important? Making the people more important than the stuff.
Yeah, keeping the right things in focus.
Yeah, and that gets in everyone's way. And what we see, the simplest way to do it, the simplest, is that the person, before they pass, makes a list of, I want this person to have this. Mm-hmm. That is the simplest way. However, that is not usually how it goes.
Right.
What usually happens is so-and-so gets the house, so-and-so gets the cabin, so-and-so gets the cars, this person can have the furniture, and it's all laid out in a will. That's usually how it happens. Or that nothing is divided. That is what I see more than you think. And so I'm going to get back to your question in just a minute, but the thing that I wish that more people planned. A, it saves a ton of money, a ton. When you have to move under duress because there's been a stroke or a heart attack or a death and everything has to be done right, like yesterday, it costs a lot more money because everything, you know, you got to get it done faster and you're making decisions based on availability and not on cost.
Yeah.
So that's a thing. But the other thing that we see happen is that when people plan, like we have this attorney that we work with, and he actually says, we're going to set aside, and let's just pick a number out of the air. We're going to set aside $15,000 to clear out the house and do any repairs that need to be done before it gets sold, so that the family recognizes that there is a set aside, a lump sum of money that is already designated for getting this work done. And they don't have to do it, A, while they're grieving, B, while they're trying to figure out how many bank accounts are out there, C, while they're working with attorneys and trying to plan a funeral. Like, that is chaos. And that creates more grief. That creates more. So back to your question, how do you navigate when more than one person wants things? Well, you can have the item valued by a professional appraisal. And there are lots of folks that do that. Some do it at no charge, some or a low cost. And some like art appraisers and coin appraisers, they do it by the piece because they have to do research. So you can do it that way and then divide the items. So like, for example, if you've got a house with a, and let's just say a Rembrandt, not everybody has a Rembrandt, but,
but some do,
but I have been in houses with Rembrandt. So yeah. I'm just saying, so you got a Rembrandt and one or two people in the, you know, in the family want the Rembrandt and then the rest gets divided amongst the family. Well, guess what? The distribution to the person who's taking the Rembrandt is going to be that they get the Rembrandt and that's it. They don't get a car. They don't get furniture. They don't get, you know, stuff from the house. They don't get proceeds from the house unless there's, unless this is a super high value, estate. So, it gets divided evenly, and that's attorneys do this all the time. And they call it the distribution of assets.
Yeah.
And that usually gets divided up in a trust or an estate. And we do a lot of that kind of work. So we work with attorneys all over the country doing this, that type of work. Now, what happens when more than one person wants it and it doesn't have value? I'm going to give you an example. So we had this house that we did and there were 9 beneficiaries and all of them wanted their aunt's recipe book. And that wasn't, it was a sentimental value thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you do when everybody wants her recipe book? Well, we had it scanned in and everybody got it.
Yeah.
So that's a really simple way to say everyone can have it. And the person who was most interested in it, who felt like they were really fighting, got the paper copy of it and everybody got the electronic copy.
Yeah. And
the electronic copy was actually wonderful because then you can search by recipe and you don't have to page through and go, where's that blueberry pie recipe?
Yeah. My sister is very creative, has a tremendous talent. You know, she has an Etsy shop and she does these custom bookmarks and book covers and anything that her creative juices can produce something with. And out of my grandmother's passing, she created this recipe book. And I said, hey, you know, not every aunt, grandmother, grandfather, whoever has an entire recipe book, but they might have a certain pie that they make, a meatloaf. Mm-hmm. I'm making myself hungry here. you know, they might have a handful. And I said, wow, what if you took that template you made and just made this special digital piece to memorialize that person? What a great way to settle that. I mean, 9 beneficiaries all like, what are you going to do? Pass it around. I get it Christmas of 27 and I get it Thanksgiving at 24, you know, kind of hard, but I love the digital thing. That's great. That's
right.
Great.
And so there's a lot of ways to distribute things. And the other part of this is, just to make it simpler is to say, okay, so if 3 people want the couch, and the couch is worth, let's just say $1,000. Then if one person says, I will take my distribution of $10,000 and $1,000 of it goes towards the couch and nobody else wants to do that. Well, then it makes it real easy for the person who wants the couch to get the couch.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like you end up recommending, suggesting a little bit of horse trading and bargaining and swapping and dealing a little bit and trying to keep everybody happy and keep focus on, hey, this person that you're helping, whether it's they're going into care, they need to downsize for a reason, or there's been a passing and a death. Sounds like some of the work you do is keeping people sane and focused on the most important thing, people.
Yes. And the thing we see, it's not usually about the distribution of stuff. It's about who to call to make the stuff go away. And so we've spent a lot of time and energy really positioning ourselves almost like an in your house Angie's List. Where does the stuff go?
Yeah.
And finding places for those things because, let's face it. You know, Americans have too much stuff. They just do. And
yeah, there's a whole industry around it.
And yes, and we live in a very, yes, we live in a very consumer-based culture, and people measure themselves on the car they have, the house they have, the purse they're carrying, the shoes they're wearing, and all of those things have value, right? And so, but the value is really based on who's willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
So with China, almost nobody is willing to pay for it. And with, let's just say, a really hot commodity is mid-century modern furniture. Okay. It is probably, in terms of furniture, it is the most valuable kind of furniture out there, Art Deco and mid-century modern. And many people don't even know what mid-century modern is. It's the stuff from the 50s and 60s. It's got weird shapes. It's low to the ground. It's got little legs. Is it comfortable? Nope. My house is full of it. And my husband hates it. He's like, this furniture. And when people walk in my house, they go, wow, your house is really cool. And I go, yeah, okay. Cause I've been collecting for 30 years. The point here is that, everybody values things differently.
Yeah.
And yeah. knowing what is most important to your family, knowing what is most important to you, if you are coming to the end of your life, and really outlining that is another thing that you can do to reduce stress, to relieve grief, and to make things easier for your family.
Yep. What are, so you said your, Betty Brigade functions as a in-home living, breathing Angie's List, Rolodex of sources and solutions and help. So what are some of those, most interesting things that you found? I was reading the other day, somebody's, grandfather passed away. He was really into baseball cards, but the grandkids weren't so much. So he tried over the years to kind of get them involved and just trading cards overall. Well, turns out he had boxes of unopened Pokemon cards.
Oh my gosh.
Dungeons and Dragons cards. Yeah. Dungeons and Dragons cards, which I know it's a thing. Magic the Gathering cards, like brand new, properly cared for, temperature humidified room, like primo stuff. And the question was, do we open it? Do we not? So that's an interesting find. Can you share some examples of interesting things and then things that you thought, how the heck are we going to get rid of this or get out of this mess?
So let's start with the things that are hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
And I get asked that question all the time. What's the most interesting thing? And I've got a few things. However, what is always hard to get rid of? Pianos. Mm-hmm. They're the bane of our existence. The only pianos that have value, have real value, are Steinway and Yamaha. Okay, those are the brand names, Steinway and Yamaha. So if you have a Steinway or a Yamaha, you will likely be able to sell your piano. If you think that you are going to give your piano to a church or a school, you are wrong. Because every school and every church already has a piano. And so we have found some solutions around pianos that have worked. And the thing that we say most often to our clients is, are you willing to pay a piano mover to get it to somebody who could really use it? So a family that maybe can't afford a piano, are you willing to pay $350 to $500, depending on what the piano mover costs? And that's what they cost. That's standard cost for moving a piano. They're really, really heavy. And so if you're willing to pay that, $400-ish dollars, you can get your piano to a family that would really, really love it and appreciate it. And many of the families that we work with say, yes, I am more than willing to do that. Can you find a home for my piano? And so we do. And so the real solution for pianos is contacting music teachers. Mm. That is the real solution. And most people don't think of it that way. So if you contact a music teacher and say, who can't afford, who really needs a piano? That's a great place. The other thing that we see tons of is unused fitness equipment. Clothes hanging apparatus. That is a great way to put it. But yes, so much fitness equipment that is unused and has become outdated. And because, as the Pelotons of the world have come up, regular riding, you know, stationary bikes are obsolete because nobody wants them. Everybody wants the screen. So just knowing that, you're like, okay. You know.
So there's no such thing as a mid-century modern stationary bike that people covet and want.
No. Chucks. Nope.
So where do things
get rid
like
of
that,
it, Jeff?
Yeah, where do
I know it's in your basement.
Actually, it's not. We do have fitness equipment in the basement. My sons use it. It's free weights and a punching bag thing. Couple little rollers for the ground for muscles and whatnot. But
yeah.
So where does that stuff go? Does it just get disposed of, recycled?
So sometimes it's put for free on like Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist and folks will come get it for free. But most often, especially the electronic, fitness equipment gets recycled, because it's got motors in it and it's, you know, got gears and that kind of stuff. And it's also got a lot of plastic on it. So it's about finding a place, a recycling place that will take it. Sometimes, fitness equipment companies will take it back for parts. If they're looking for parts.
Interesting. So that's the stuff that's rough to deal with, hard to deal with.
So wait a minute. So pianos, fitness equipment.
Okay.
Grandfather and grandmother clocks, really hard to get rid of. And floral couches.
I was going to comment on my first bachelor pad. We had three of them. We had three floral couches we bought from the reused store. And yeah, we were bachelors. I was like, we worked and we partied. And, you know, sitting down really wasn't a thought. But yeah, old floral couches. And that's just because it's old doesn't mean it's mid-century modern, right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes. I often say that to our clients. Just because it's old doesn't mean it's valuable.
Yeah. And just mean it's old. Yeah.
Yeah. So the interesting things, are, of course, you know, when you come across, high-end art and often people know that, they know what's high-end or they know that their family has purchased a piece of art that has some value. And that's the good news. But the question is, was it properly stored? Was it in a room that was temperature controlled? And, did it, you know, if it got any moisture behind the glass or if it got mildew behind the glass, like the value of the art has probably dropped considerably. Things that are valuable, that we see a lot of are, probably the good silver. So, I'm going to talk quickly about silver. So there's lots and lots and lots of silver plate out there. Things that are just plated with silver, but the base of them is, aluminum or it's some other, it's copper. It's not really silver.
Yeah. Pure silver through and through.
Yeah. It will say silver plate or plate. And, the things that are sterling have held their value. So if you do come across sterling, and it's stamped with sterling or it's stamped with an S, it's kind of a scripted S. And you can even Google, like, what are the stamps for silver? And there's a bunch of them. So, that's something that we see regularly. We also see regularly as we're clearing out homes that there is old coins, real silver coins, real gold coins, we haven't come across any doubloons, but you know, we might, you never know.
Yeah.
But what people aren't looking for, gift cards. There's always gift cards in people's homes.
I hadn't even thought of that.
There is always, especially if the person was a planner, there are life insurance policies that may not have been cashed in and those do have value. If the person grew up in the 40s and 50s, there might be stock certificates. And back in the 40s and 50s, they issued paper stock certificates. And so you might not be looking for a piece of paper that has value, but life insurance policies and stock certificates are definitely a thing. We had one home that we cleared out and the family didn't want to clear it out. This lady was a stock investor and a paper hoarder. And if you had hired a, she had all of her, every stock prospectus she had ever even considered purchasing, she kept the prospectus and prospectus.
Wow.
And so there were literally hundreds of them all filed neatly in boxes. And what you didn't see is that the stock certificates that she also purchased were filed neatly with the prospecti or prospectuses. And so we found about $28,000 worth of uncashed stock certificates inside this house.
And just
to put that in perspective, in the same house, the same lady had a dishwasher full of thousands and thousands of Sweet and Low packets. So
I thought you could say bills, but okay.
No, Sweet and Low packets. Sweet and Low packets. So probably at least 10,000 Sweet and Low packets just jammed into the dishwasher.
Wow. Yeah.
So I got stories. And so weird things, a dishwasher full of Sweet and Low. Like I saw that once. I had never seen it since. And another one we did, this was actually really interesting. We had this big house. These people were, philanthropists. They had a 7,000 square foot house. So big, big house, mm-hmm. 8 bedrooms in this house. Lady had 300 sets of sheets. She was a super shopper.
Wow.
So sometimes what we see in these homes is that, people have some form of OCD. And that's what that is. That's an obsessive compulsive shopping disorder.
Mm-hmm.
With 8 bedrooms, you don't need 300 sets of sheets. But the cool part of when we're doing this work is that the estate sale company doesn't want to sell sheets. They want to sell high-end art. They want to sell rugs. They want to sell nice furniture, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And so we then can take those sheets that are more than 1,000 thread count and give them to donation centers. And all of a sudden, these folks that have had nothing, veterans, single parents, people who are, homeless, can get something that's really nice for themselves.
Yeah.
And, it's really important to find homes for things that can't be used elsewhere.
Yeah. So we've got some stats up on the screen. So in 2023, you found over $21,000 of value that returned to clients. So kind of like those stock certificates.
Correct.
That was obviously one big jackpot.
No, that was multiple. That was over the course of the entire year. We actually measure that every week. So we call that Betty money. So every staff meeting, we ask who found Betty money, and it might be a jar full of pennies, and a jar full of pennies counts as $5 so that we don't have to actually count them. If we find gift cards, then we count them as the value of the gift card, and we still hand them back to the family.
Sure.
But it's just really a matter of saying, hey, in one house, we found $16,000 in cash. And the lady was like, I had no idea. So
my wife's grandfather had that. And this brings me to my next question, getting a little, I don't know if racy is the right phrase, but, my wife's grandfather, Pop-Pop, was a Marine. And, kind of like old school World War II generation, rough and tumble kind of guy, super nice, super sweetheart, but, rough around the edges, gruff at times. And, we got into one bedroom as the family, and I was kind of helping doing the heavy lifting as the in-law to everybody. And, I kind of turned a corner and I saw this picture in magazine, and I just said to everybody, I said, hey, why don't y'all take a break? I'm just going to make sure Pop-Pop doesn't get embarrassed by anything he might not want his granddaughters and, daughters-in-law to see. How's that sound? you can check my pockets. I'm not putting any cash, but yeah, like, you know, I'm referencing like a Playboy and, you know, a silly little doll and not like, yeah, silly little like novelty toys and, you know, things like that. Like, how do you handle that? What's the thing there where you protect somebody's memory and the vision that somebody had of their beloved grandmother, or grandfather, aunt and uncle?
Right. And that happens so much.
Yeah.
There is stuff, you know, there's sex toys, there's photos, there's all kinds of, and sometimes personal films. We were clearing out this lady's attic, and her husband had passed away. And she said, you know, I just can't get up in the attic myself anymore. So we're pulling down all the stuff. And I'm this is maybe, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. And there's this box. And I said, hey, I found a box of reel-to-reel movies. And I start looking at the titles, and it's all like 70s porn. Mm. And like, okay. And so I share this with her, and the lady just cracks up and she goes, yep, that was my husband. And I said, do you realize that this is valuable? And she said, you're kidding. And I said, no, as long as the movies can still be viewed, like that the film didn't get too, brittle.
Because
film can get brittle. And so if the film isn't brittle, then there are collectors for all kinds of weird stuff, including vintage pornography.
Hmm. Yeah, that I did not know. Did not know. That's
things
wild.
You learn from Sharon.
Yeah. Yeah. So, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, I just wanted to say, though, that, you know, we're talking a lot about stuff, but what we really do and what we talk about internally in our office is transformation. And so transformation is about making a change. So when you are letting go of things, you are opening the space for new stuff, new energy, new experiences to come into your life. And so when we're talking to our clients, especially the ones who are still alive, and we do work with the living, yay. But we also work with people who have passed, and we're saying, hey, what is your vision for your new apartment, for your new home, for your new life? And so we can then start building based on what their vision is. Sometimes they don't have a vision. Sometimes they're so overwhelmed that we start putting that together for them. And I just want to give you a quick example. So there was this lady that we moved, and she was so resistant. Her name was Mary. She was so resistant to moving. She had lived in alone in her apartment, and her apartment was like little skinny pathways through her apartment and piled to the ceiling, and it was dark and it was dank. And I was like, oh, she's so isolated. And that happens a lot with older people, as they get isolated.
Yeah.
Well, so she eventually moved to the senior community. And we moved her in, and a couple weeks later, I was in the lobby, and I see this woman walking towards me, and her hair is done and her makeup is done, and she's got on a beautiful dress. Well, it was Mary, but I didn't even recognize her. She looked so completely 100% different because she was suddenly around people her age. She was in a place where she felt valued, and she came up to me and said, I'm so sorry that I gave you such a hard time about moving me. I wish I had moved years ago. This is delightful. I am so happy to have moved. It really is. And I still think about her, and she has since passed. This was several years ago, but I wish I could tell every single person who's thinking about moving to a new place, hey, you get to start fresh. You get a whole new beginning, and you get to decide what your path is. And that is true transformation.
Yeah.
And many people don't think about that when they're thinking about moving and letting go of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just probably thinking about what I need to bring in the context of this new space, as opposed to saying this new space can be something I've never had before.
Absolutely.
I really like that.
Absolutely.
Qu- question that I thought of leading up to our time today, and we titled our show Chaos Through the Clutter. You know, there's the anecdotes of a cluttered desk equals a great mind, right?
I personally don't subscribe to that, but my husband does.
Right. Yeah. So like, talk us through that. Like, so people listening and watching, you know, they're living their life, they have their office, they have their workspace, they have their home space. Is there an answer, or is it an answer that's best for the person?
So, I would say, yes, there is an answer for everyone, but you have to be willing to do your own work. And it doesn't just mean organizing your space. It means really figuring out what is best for you. So, I'm just going to share because, I mean, Jeff, you know my husband, my husband is a saver. He is left to his own devices. Our house would be chaos. And that is my personal hell. And so how do you live with somebody who is the polar opposite of you in terms of stuff?
Yeah.
And so what we did was we set some ground rules when we first got together. And we said, okay, well, I said, but let's face it, he didn't care.
He didn't want ground rules.
He never wants ground rules. But the point here is that in order for me to feel calm inside, I have to have clear spaces. I have to have room around me to work and move. And so we decided that during the week when we are busy, things can get chaosy. Things can get piled up. Shoes can get left. Coats can get left over a chair. That type of stuff. And just the basics get done. The dishes get done. The counters get wiped. The bathroom stays clean. That type of stuff. But when we have our break time on the weekends, that's when everything gets put away. So the shoes get put away, the coats get hung up, the stuff that has kind of piled up on the dining room table gets reset. And we just call it our reset. And that has really helped. We've coached a lot of people through this, and that has helped a lot of people understand that life is happening all around you and you get to decide what the rules are.
Yeah.
And love it. So by saying to your partner, here's what I am willing to do. I am willing to let the house be chaosy during the week, as long as on the weekends, it stops being so much chaos, and that so that we can have a quiet, because for me, decluttered means quiet, visually quiet. And I need that. I need that to be calm.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that little tip of you set it around the boundaries. We're in the moment. You know, in our home, I have to call my sons, like, you're like Vikings. You're just cutting a swath through this uncharted land, and you're just going forward, and behind you is a trail of shoes and bags and workout gear and water bottles. Like, we moved some furniture around this weekend, and I'm like, oh, well, there's where all the shaker bottles and the true flasks went. They're under the sofa downstairs, because when the teenage friends come over, it's a party, and then stuff just gets left, you know? So, I like that agreement. We're going to do this throughout the week and on the weekend. Yeah, I like that. We're going to clear the clutter, have a free mind, feel more comfortable, be more happier in our spaces. I like that. It's a very good tip.
And thank you. And then one of the things that you can do as a family is say, okay, so once a month or once a quarter, we are going to, you know, tip the couches over and check to make sure there's nothing underneath. We're going to and because things do get just kind of shoved behind or in drawers or in closets. So having that, you know, in when I was in corporate life, it was the clear your cube day. Mm-hmm. And so what if we did that as a family, so that, okay, each person spends a day clearing their closet, under their bed, the spaces where they shove things, to say, okay, because again, when you are letting that stuff go, you're making space and energy for new positive things to come to you.
Yeah. 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 I love that. You know, it's interesting. Part of this move we did over the weekend, my son and his girlfriend, my son's into Legos, and it's his hobby. And as he's gotten older, they get more intricate, you know, and nicer to look at than just the little $5 pack you buy off the quick store shelf, right? And right. He says, I'm gonna add to this living room aesthetic. And so he brought down the Japanese bonsai tree logo set. And at first I was kind of hesitant to it, but I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. Hey, I look at it, my wife looks at it, like there's a reminder of our son right in front of us. Not that he's gone or anything, but like, there he is. He's part of our life. We love him. That's his thing. It's great. And he set a couple of them up, and it was just kind of neat that when you transform that space, you can bring something new in. And it was a cool little moment. I like that. So you help people in moments of transition. You help families where a loved one's passed away. You help people downsize, all ages and all situations. You talked about cleaning out the cubicle. And I don't know this after knowing you this long. Do you help corporate accounts, like businesses, move and shift and find new space and transform?
We do. We do. In fact, last summer, we did a clear out for a trust where it was a business, and they had two adjoining businesses, and one side was an engineering firm and the other side was a manufacturing firm. And so there were two football field size pole barns that needed to be cleared.
Oh, wow.
They were enormous. It took us all summer long. And what was most interesting about this is, so the family used these pole barns as a dumping ground. Anything that they purchased that they no longer wanted, they would just bring to these pole barns. And so there was about a dozen or 15 cars that were flat on the rims, just left. There was a 1800s dentist chair up in the rafters, all kinds of things. But the thing that was really interesting is that the engineering firm worked with, because we're here in Michigan, worked with several of the car companies, and they would manufacture pieces, specialty pieces for the big three. Yeah. And actually the big four. And so a lot of the stuff that as we were going through, because there was, I don't know, 400 or 500 banker boxes full of drawings. So we had to go through all of those banker boxes and make sure that none of the drawings were proprietary. And so that they all got shredded, because we didn't want, you know, Stellantis or Ford or Toyota coming back to this family and saying, you let this piece of equipment out into the public.
Yeah.
And so they would have the engineering side, and then they would have the manufacturing side. So right next door, there was a place they would draw the pieces, and then they would take them right next door and make them. And it was really just an interesting thing, because we had to drain all of the big pieces of equipment. So they all had, you know, liquid oil and sure. all kinds of lubricants in them, and they all had to be professionally drained and taken to toxic waste. And there's like all kinds of permits around that, just so you know, you can't just do it. And it was a fascinating job. Very, very unusual, because it was just like you could get lost in these buildings. They were just humongous. And yeah. So many drawings, and some of them were like some farmer walked in because it was out in the middle of nowhere. So some farmer would walk in with, like, he had traced a piece from his tractor that broke, and he'd be like, I want you to make this. And it would be like handwritten, you know, some dude just walks in off the street, make this part for me so I could fix my tractor. And they were that also the working boxes. With, you know, people with, you know, big, huge accounts.
Yeah. That's wild. That's wild. So look, as we're approaching the end of our time together, I want to make mention of your book, The Downsizing the Silver Tsunami. You can get it. Easy place to get it. It's on Amazon, but if you want to quickly remember where you might go to get it, you go to bettybrigade.com/book, and that'll bounce you over to Amazon. Looks like it's a great book. 126 ratings, 4.2 stars. Tell us what's in the book and what people can learn from it.
It's really a reference book. How to, like, where does stuff go? How to work with an estate sale company? What does it mean to have an auction? What does it mean to hire a great mover or a good realtor? One whole chapter is why your realtor is your new BFF. And it's really a very instructional book. We put it in 14-point font for older eyeball. And there's also a checklist in the back of moving. So you can kind of see what the steps are and, just keep using it or hand it down. I know that when I first published it, a bunch of libraries bought it. And so it's in all of my local libraries.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And did that book, was one of the things that got you on the Dr. Phil show?
That was one of the, that was one of the many things. Dr. Phil, called our office and said, well, not him, his producer called our office. Dr. Phil doesn't make the phone calls.
Right.
He called our office and said, I need help with a guy who is a hoarder who has bed bugs. We didn't actually end up going to the house, because the hoarder himself was not willing to get help. So when we're working with hoarders, we do require that they are in therapy because it's about the stuff and it's not about the stuff at all. There's a reason why their house got that way.
Yeah, the stuff is often protection for the issue, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love everything about you, Sharon.
Aww,
love our friendship.
Thanks.
I'm going to get the book, just again, looking at ahead of what our family is going to work through over the next 6 months or so. So I'm going to get it. I'll get it right off of Amazon and leave you a nice review. And you should always do that for people that you love and you appreciate their stuff. Give them a review. It's always nice. It's a nice little way to say, give Sharon's book a review, get the book, bettybrigade.com/book, but give me a like and a follow too. I'd love if you do that. Helps get the show out to you. And follow all of Sharon's stuff. BettyBrigade.com is the place to go. If she can help you downsize, help you move, help your company move, maybe get some of that organization in play you've been so looking for. And listen, on a personal front, she's salt of the earth. Fantastic person who cares. I've seen how the insides of her company work. She'll do an amazing job for you. So Sharon, thank you so much for stopping by the show and taking the time with us today.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, I love when people call me salty.
That's right. That's your favorite snack, right?
Yeah.
No, love it. Love it. Sharon, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. This has been my pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, so again, thank you so much for watching this week's episode of The Big Ticket Life. Well, you know, wherever you're watching, LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, please give us a follow, a subscribe, a like. It really helps get the show spread around. It helps great guests like Sharon get their word out and how they can help people in this world live a life full of courage, live a life of transformation, live a life of ease. That's what I want for you. You know, this week ahead, I challenge you to live as that example of courage, facing struggles head on with strength. And I want you to ask, instead of asking, why me? Ask what's meant for me to learn so others can see your unique superpower of living as an example of courage. We'll see you next week on The Big Ticket Life. Take care. You've just heard another impactful show on The Big Ticket Life, challenging leaders to lead with courage and work to solve the clash that exists between those they lead and the lives they live. Now is the time to focus on leveling up the humans you lead and the impact you can create in our lives. It's time to lead with courage and be a living example of courage. I'd love for you to go to thejeffg.com/mission. That's thejeffg.com/mission right now and book a call with me to discuss how to integrate these examples of courage into your leadership, how to approach your team with vulnerability, and most importantly, so we can plan out how you'll invest and level up the humans you lead for maximum healing and impact so you can be the leader your people need every day. Visit thejeffg.com thejeffg.com/mission. That's thejeffg.com/mission right now and book a call with me today.